Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Everybody's just saving gas. So I wasn't thrilled with the way that it all worked out. I think it's needed to go out and figure out a new package for 2025. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to Kevin Harvick's Happy Hour, presented by NASCAR and Fox. I'm Kevin Harvick. She's Caitlin Vincey, and he's somebody that we invited to the show, Mama Smith.
Never fails.
It's going to be a fun show.
It's going to be.
I can tell you right now, this is going to be fun.
Kevin told us earlier that he's feeling fiery today. So we are very curious to see what that means.
Yes. Yeah.
Kevin, what's the hula baloo about?
The hula baloo. Listen.
Oh, dear.
If we're going to start right off the bat, let's just say I messed this up pretty bad. And I have no defense. I asked for this. I said, Mamba, your words suck. You're not choosing hard enough words. And this week we have hullabaloo. And I was so excited to say the word that I was trying to use it in context and completely demolished it. Thank God for Mike Joy. Clint had no chance that he knew the word because I tried not to tell them this week because I wanted it to be exciting. I didn't know it was going to be exciting because I was just going to have a word salad. So
word salad. Right.
Word Thank
salad.
You.
Love yeah. Hey, salad. Shout out to the closers. You guys delivered. That was a 5-star review.
That's right.
Word. Thank you very much.
And they can keep leaving those on social media, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and subscribing to us on YouTube, of course, as well, and follow Harvick Happy Pod. But I know you want to play this video.
I'm We're excited. Yeah, sorry. I'm so excited to
the
hear
the hullabaloo.
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 Roll the tape.
Definitely a huge hullabaloo about Kyle Larson's roof rail and everything that he had going on after he didn't even get to qualify yesterday. So now he's going to be way behind. He's not going to have the draft. His lap time is going to be a tremendous amount slower. So
Would
he's
you
hoping
say
for
that
some
one more time.
Hullabaloo.
What is that?
It's 8 rows now, 2x2, and then it's 3 wide, right in the middle of the pack. I think the word is hullabaloo.
It's Mike Joy for me.
Mike Joy, yeah.
I knew I had messed it up bad because Clint was over there slapping his leg, laughing, had his mute button on, completely out of control. And then he asked me to say it again, and I said it wrong again.
Oh,
I couldn't even correct myself the second time, and Mike Joy just rolls right through. And we're 8 rows, 3 wide, it's hullabaloo. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is a complete disaster.
Oh, hey, you picked a tough one.
We picked a tough. The best thing is probably Saturday. I'm at the Birmingham Stallions game and Kevin calls me and he's like, how do you pronounce this word? Because him and Jacob
Ullman
were together. They were trying to figure out. I'm like, well, what do you think it is? Because I didn't want to, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they had two different sides. And so we figured it out together and he was excited about it.
I was. Well, you keep making them hard enough to be challenging. I like that. I would rather mess it up than have something that nobody noticed.
You've gotten all the others perfectly, so we'll let it slide.
Yeah. We haven't gone past a four-letter phrase or a four-letter word, so.
Kerfuffle. Kerfuffle, you got that one.
Kerfuffle, that's fair.
Yeah.
Kerfuffle, that was more in my
wheelhouse.
More in my age group,
yeah.
I guess you could say. Maybe even pre.
I mean,
it might have been more Mike Joy's generation.
Yeah, because that was a squireism, as I like to call it.
Well, I think that the big miss on this whole situation is the big miss is I didn't pick a word for your first broadcast.
Yes. You didn't even know I was on broadcast.
I did know, but I wanted you to believe that I didn't know anything about your first broadcast because if you remember correctly, we actually were on the phone together with Jacob.
Yeah.
Congratulating you on your first broadcast. So I know there's been at least 2 days true. Between that phone call and now. So your first word is coming.
Hey, but good job by you on pit road. How did it go for you? What did you think?
It was good. No, yeah. It was good. I had fun. And I think it's something you guys have both talked about, like people that don't know what's going on TV and producing and how this whole thing works. If you had to listen to what I was listening to, you wouldn't know what you would. It's tough.
Like, it is. A lot of, I mean, you have a pit spotter speaking to you. You're scanning a radio director, pit producer, booth talent, pit road reporter. All of those people are talking to you.
Yeah.
At any given time. You may hear all of them somehow.
Yeah. And you don't know, like, I'm getting used to everyone's voice. So I know who is talking to me. And like, so the best thing was, this is Saturday, right? So they're coming off, you guys were coming off of Hub.
Race Hub.
So I'm listening to KV and Race Hub. And then all of a sudden it switches over to Jamie and everyone in the booth. And I'm like, okay, so this is like pre-race? Okay, and we had set up our shot. Oh. Yeah, so we had set up our shot was going to be at the 30 pit stall. Well, I'm up by the 73 car because that's where the camera was. And I'm like, are we going? And they're like, no. And I'm like, okay. And then I hear 3, 2, 1. All right, Mamba. And I'm like, oh. And I'm like trying to get my mic. I was like, and then the national anthem's going on. Like, it was.
You love that?
I had that moment too during Daytona. There was a brief part of Daytona where they were all talking like we were on the air showing what was happening on the screen while we were in commercial. And they were talking through the whole thing like we were actually calling it. Yeah. I'm thinking to myself, well,
Is this real?
Am I on the air? Not on the air? I'm not real sure. So I'm just going to start calling it as well. So
Don't you love that game?
I didn't know what
are we live or are we not?
Oh, yeah. What? And I felt bad because then the national anthem was going. So I was like, I really don't want to. Am I on TV? And I'm like,
yeah. Should I put my hand on my heart? What should I do?
Oh, my goodness. Felt like Ricky Bobby.
I thought you did good. You were still true to yourself. Your personality showed through.
Yeah, honestly, I think I blacked out through half of it.
I blacked out the first time I interviewed Kevin because it was my first interview I ever did for Speed Channel.
Oh.
And I was so nervous. You were very intimidating. I mean, you still are, honestly. But yeah, I literally blacked out in that interview. I was like, I don't know what he said, but he said something.
Who was your first interview this weekend?
This weekend I didn't have an interview with a driver till post race, which was Tanner Gray.
Okay.
But like my first hit was about Frankie.
He was still your first interview. Whether it was before the race or after, it's still your first one.
Yeah. Okay.
The broadcast.
All right, thanks, Unc.
And he just sent it to the booth. He didn't say to
you. Oh, yeah. Like, hey, listen to this. This is the best part.
I heard that.
Yeah, this is the best part. Because I'm like, because they were like, all right, you're going to throw it back to the booth. And I'm like, okay, cool. Well, it came back. It came to me in a way that, like, I didn't know who I was throwing it back to.
Yeah.
And so I was like, and I just ended it. Like the conversation, which I probably could have just ended it and they would have picked up. But I felt like I had to say something. And I was just like, yeah, so that was, you know, Tanner Gray,
Booth. No, we're just going to do that when, like, Kevin needs to talk. We're just going to say analyst.
My favorite part of screwing stuff up like that is the producer will be talking in one ear and we'll be live on the air and I'll answer his question on the air. It was like, yeah, we're good. Yeah.
Anyway,
we're on the air.
I had a scary incident though, because I got a new phone and I really wanted to hear you and listen to you on the broadcast, but I was driving to Talladega. So I'm on my phone trying to log into the app, but none of the logins are in there because it's a new phone.
Right.
And so I'm kind of fiddling it, you know, with the phone, but there's no one in front of me while I'm driving. But I feel a car like next to me in the left lane, like riding in tandem with me. And I kind of glance over. It was a cop. And I dropped that phone so fast. I feel like he was trying to send a message to me like, hey, put your phone down. Hey. I'm like, I'm trying to hear my best friend. It was not good. Yeah,
well, maybe if that would happen, you could explain the situation.
I would have almost got a ticket just to hear you do your pit reporting.
Isn't that sweet?
Isn't that sweet?
I love that.
Yeah, that's it. But
I was driving back. We were driving. You mentioned the cop pulling up next to you.
And it was scary.
We were driving to Martinsville from the hotel up to the racetrack. And I was by myself. And all the producers and everybody from the team were in a van next to me. And they didn't see me pulling up beside him. And so I just started merging over. It was grossy driving. I started merging over and I finally just ran him all the way into the emergency lane. And he's leaning up like, you know.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, your car looks like it could be a police vehicle.
My car?
Yeah. It's all murked out.
Yeah.
So do you know what that means? Murked out?
Not really.
I don't either. I just agree with you. I gotta be honest.
Okay. It's like all tinted and blacked
out. Yeah. Okay.
It's just
All right. So that's how the weekend went for everybody. It was eventful for all of us. But let's talk about this race first and foremost. Let's start with the winner, Tyler Reddick. Huge moment or well, where do you want to start?
No, let's start there. Go ahead. No, you start there. Let's start there.
Start on a high before we start. Yeah.
You know, the best thing that I've seen this year is Michael Jordan in Victory Lane and yeah. being able to see his own car win. I think as much effort and time that he has put in to be able to actually physically be there in Victory Lane was a win for everybody on his team, everybody involved, everybody in the sport, because Michael Jordan, you could hear the passion and enthusiasm that he has for this sport when Jamie Little interviewed him afterwards. But aside from Michael being there, Tyler Reddick, he knows that he should be winning. He knows he has the speed to win. He knows that he's had a couple opportunities to be in position to win this year, and they haven't won. Mm-hmm. And this time they're in position to win and win a race that they probably didn't think they were going to win until 100, 200 yards yep. to go. So you could feel the emotion from Tyler Reddick and just the relief to get that car into Victory Lane. And I like that. I love the fire and the passion and enthusiasm. The week before, I didn't think he did a very good job. Closing that race out at Texas, he got frustrated on a couple restarts, mm-hmm. made three or four mistakes and lost several positions, came back with a decent finish, but he's driving and acting like he expects to win every single week. And that pressure that comes with that is tough to navigate until you've been in the middle of it. And when you are in the middle of that and win, it's a huge relief.
It's pretty crazy because I think 2311 has two drivers that are the hardest critics on themselves. And when they win or when they don't win, like they are both ride that emotion. And then you look at Michael Jordan and he's in Victory Lane giving all of his emotion. You're like, well, now it makes a lot of sense. Like he is very emotional about this as well. Mm-hmm. And him celebrating, he's with Bo talking to him. Tyler's son, Bo. And like, it was just great. And it was a great moment for the sport. It was a great moment for MJ and like they and that whole team, right? They just it meant so much to him. And to see him there with mm-hmm. his car, his name on the side of it. The 45 right. has won twice with a different shoe on it now. Mm-hmm. With Kurt and now with Tyler.
Well, I mean, at first glance you would think it's the first win for Mercedes.
Yeah.
I looked at that car several times. The first time I looked at it, I'm like, okay, what's the Mercedes tie here? And then I'm thinking, so, well, that's not Mercedes.
That just makes sense.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. But at first glance, it looked like a Mercedes logo on the side of the mm-hmm. car.
So clean.
I was in Victory Lane because I was filling in on Sirius XM for their Victory Lane broadcast. And you could just sense a like shift when Michael Jordan came in because everyone was like, oh, MJ is here because even Tyler Reddick didn't know he was at the race. Mm. Apparently, it was kind of on the fence whether he was attending or not. But just seeing the emotions like you guys talked about of the whole family and the moment with Bo, what a big flex for Bo to someday be like, hey, I was in Victory Lane.
Those are lifetime memories right there. Yeah. But Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan, right? And we have a lot of owners who don't show up very often. To the racetrack and show the participation and FaceTime with their team that they should. And Michael Jordan is there more than people know.
Right.
And he's there a fair amount. And whether he's seen or not doesn't really matter. I mean, he participates in things that his team does. And that matters to a race team to mm-hmm. have your owner's presence in the shop or at the racetrack. And you know, I think that shows how much he enjoys our sport.
I can't tell you how much that matters. Seeing your boss at the shop or at the track and excited with you and going through those emotions with you. I think one of my favorite things about MJ is he's up there a lot of times behind Booty or behind Billy Scott, crew chief for Tyler Reddick, and asking them questions mid-race or talking with them about what is going on. And they're locked in. Like, he is an intricate part of this race team, not just a figurehead or a person, you know what I mean? So when I was at Stuart Haas and Tony would walk through the building, everyone would know that Tony was coming. And like everyone was pepped up. It just gave you a shot in the arm because you just wanted it that much more for your owner being around.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael Jordan, obviously hugely impactful. I noticed too that a lot of major media news outlets were showing the finish yesterday on their coverage everywhere. And showing Michael Jordan in victory lane and things like that. But to your point about Tyler Reddick, one of the things he told me in post race was he's glad he won, but he's really proud of the fact they've had five consecutive top tens because that's a career high for him and just speaks to his consistency right now. He did reference Texas, like felt like he gave one away a little bit there and didn't get the win. But obviously he is firing on all cylinders and now tons of momentum for them moving forward. So those were the winners, the happy point. Now yeah. For the not so, he's already laughing, raising his eyebrows. All right, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with McDowell incident or the Toyotas or where are we going here?
Before we get to the, I guess since we've already talked about the winner, we can just talk about how he became the winner.
Okay.
And that Michael McDowell's block. And we talked going into the weekend. I felt like the Fords needed, somebody from the Ford camp needed to win this race. Michael McDowell and his team had their car on the front row, Austin Cindric beside him. So Ford came with the speed to be able to do what they needed to do. It turned into this weird, terrible fuel mileage race, 4 seconds off the pace, saving gas. They'd race at the end of the stage and then they'd race again. They raced again at the end of the stage. So a lot of different agendas as we went throughout the day. But at the end of the race, the Ford showed up at the front of the pack with McDowell, Brad Keselowski, Noah Gregson, and really that last block, I think Michael McDowell was going to spin out on his own. I really think as he came down to make the second block down the racetrack, you know, I think that it was just a, you know, I heard him talk about saying he thought he was clear, but he might have been clear, but as aggressively as he pulled that car down and had to pull it back to the right, it looked like it was going to spin out regardless. So I think he knew that was probably his shot. They haven't had the speed that they had last year. In my opinion, they've done a good job with their cars, and I feel like this was their shot to go to victory lane, and he knew that. But there's never anything good that comes from the second block usually.
Do you think that's levels of, I don't want to say desperation, or just like obviously there's a lot on the line for these teams towards the tail end, especially one that hasn't visited victory lane yet, because he has experience. So you can't say, well, lack of experience for that. But what you think he was just?
I think they know that they had to win. I don't think that they can compete to win on a mile and a half or a short track right now. They just don't have the speed in that car that they had last year. The Fords in general don't have the speed on those other racetracks than they had last year.
Right.
They had the speed this weekend, but it still wasn't, I didn't feel like as dominant as the position that they were in Daytona. When you look at the 22 car and how the Joey Logano controlled the race at Daytona until he got wrecked, they controlled that race. And I didn't feel like they controlled this race like they did, at the beginning of the year at Daytona. So a little bit different. I think when you go from Daytona to Talladega, the variance in the decisions that you have to make from a drag speed ride quality standpoint, there's less of it because of it being Talladega, and there's less handling involved. So, I think Michael knew he had to make it happen, and you know he was close to doing that, and I think he got out a little too far there at the end, and let Brad get clear of that second place car, but you just never know how that's going to work out as you're getting that close to the finish line.
It started a chain reaction. Many people wrecking behind him, most notably the Corey LaJoy on the side. What did you think when you were watching all that unfolding?
Yeah, so Corey is 50-50 Tony Hawk style grinding the wall.
Yeah,
and like in it for a long time because it was from the middle of the tri-oval, basically. And Josh Berry, so Corey and Josh Berry almost kind of flipped over simultaneously. And to you guys' point, like that block, you're blocking four lanes of traffic. Mm-hmm. Right, because it went all the way, pretty much all the way to the outside wall, all the way back. And Brad had already started making his third move to the outside of McDowell when they kind of like swiped the nose, the bumper and the nose kind of swiped each other. And I think McDowell was already so far left coming back right that they were wrecking. Like it really put him out of shape and sent him. And I feel bad for Brad because we did talk about the Fords and we talked about Brad and like want to see Brad Keselowski go to victory lane in his own car.
One of the best on those tracks.
Yeah, and that was his really, and the 34 spins it, checks him up, and right at the same time that they kind of get together, the 19 of Truex gives Reddick a punch.
Yep.
And really, and it just leapfrogged him, and that was it.
Yeah, when you go back and you listen to the in-car videos of all those cars, it's just Reddick had to lift so much less than Brad, yeah, and able to just mm-hmm. keep a little bit of momentum. And at that point, you don't really know if the caution's going to get thrown, not get thrown. I think NASCAR has its checklist of things that they have to run through in order to decide if they're going to throw the caution. And it all happened so fast that the caution wasn't thrown until after the leaders went past the start finish line. And then they lined everybody else out when lined everybody else up by when the caution was thrown. So, it's really, and when you go back even further, Reddick was put in that position. He and Truex were put in that position because it's just a pure bonehead move from the seven or eight Toyotas that mm-hmm. were drafting together. They had kind of fooled everybody on the strategy and put themselves in a position to be really in control of the race. Mm-hmm. And you saw that play out for a couple of them, but the other four or five of them were wrecked running in a single file line.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, there's always things that can happen, but that is just a terrible, terrible move by the group of Toyotas that was running there together. I think we talked about it on a broadcast. When you go into turn three and you go over all those bumps, I think the cars kind of got out of shape and they were all pushing mm-hmm. and got misaligned. Mm-hmm. And I think by the time you got three or four cars back in that group, I don't think John Hunter ever lifted. I think he just, right. I think he was so late to the lift party that, Eric Jones was the kind of the one that got shot out of the cannon and wrecked. And then they bounced off the wall and collected Denny Hamlin. And just, I think they knew that they were in a position needed to make time and just got to pushing too hard and got misaligned over those bumps and crashed each other running single file.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eric Jones with a really hard impact. And we do know that Legacy obviously put out that statement saying he went to a local hospital for treatment. He's been evaluated and released back here in North Carolina, but hard impacts. And I mean, we talked about it off camera, just what those are like in this car. It's very serious.
And you know, the Josh Berry incident, the Corey LaJoie incident, those cars, when they get up in the air like that and slam back into the ground, it feels like somebody just takes a punch and hammers it right through your spine. It is yep. violent. Eric Jones's hit was violent. It blew the air cleaner off. It blew the hood off. And, you know, I think that, you know, he was, see all those cars getting misaligned. He was definitely over 160 miles an hour, I'd say, if not more, when he hit that fence like that. And those right angles and hits like that are just really, really tough. And with this Gen 7 car, they are just much more violent. It doesn't look like it on the videos until you slow them down tremendously. There's actually a camera inside the car, a high-speed camera that takes it frame by frame a lot faster than a lot of the other cameras can. But even when we slow it down for television with the cameras we have, it just, you really see the body move. And so what happens with these cars, the old car had a ramp up process that is pretty flat, right? So from a second standpoint, you know, you go from here to the end of the wreck, mm-hmm. the slope of the impact is absorbed by the car like this. This car is absorbed like this. So basically when you hit something now, it's like, it happens so fast. So like in a whiplash situation, it happens a lot faster because a lot of that impact is going through your body because it just, the whip is whipped faster,
yeah.
is I guess one way to explain it. So it just becomes much more violent for the driver. And that Eric Jones shot was big. And you obviously know now he's been in and out of the hospital trying to figure out what's wrong. We've seen the concussions. So definitely still have a lot of work to do with this car to put these drivers in a better position to absorb these impacts. Obviously, he's hurt, and they're planning for the catastrophic impact, but definitely still some work to do.
We're obviously thinking about him and hoping that he will recover from everything that's
absolutely.
Going on. What did you think when you saw this strategy from the Toyotas? And Tyler Reddick said after the race, there was just a bad energy, he said, at that point in the race. Yeah. He was experiencing it.
Yeah, so I'm sitting, shout out to Fox for letting my dad go to the suite. That was awesome. It was his first Talladega race. He had a great time.
Nice.
But I'm sitting there with him and we're watching. And I'm like, the Toyotas are going to wreck. Because it was like the lap before that, they had come down the front stretch and they were just dancing around. Like the guys right behind, I guess it was Eric Jones and like Bubba, and they were just moving around a lot. And I'm like, seems like they're just not settled in to what mm-hmm. they were doing. And they get down over to the three that next lap and it all hell broke loose. And that hit was so quick and so hard. It reminds me of Blaney's, that the couple that Blaney has had over the last few years, and Blaney took a shot at Daytona that was like that. And I think that was faster
than was
the
fast.
Blaney one. Because you're still driving the car at that point. Like, you're still in the gas and still, and he's chasing it. And then it just was in the fence. So that one was, that was really hard. Thinking about Eric Jones, making sure hopefully recovers very quickly and he'll be back in the car.
Yeah. When referencing the Reddit comment about the bad energy, can you immediately feel that as a driver as it's unfolding?
Well, I think that their cars don't seem to be able to be pushed as well
as the
Fords for sure. But it seems like they're the worst cars to push. You know, that last year they fixed the front of their Camry this year to make it flat so they could be a good pusher. But it just doesn't seem like they've got the back of the car settled. And when you're trying to make time like that, you know you have to push. And the more tightly compacted you could keep that line, the faster the lap time is going to be. And up until that point, they were faster than the pack for a couple laps before that. But man, it ended in just an embarrassing set of circumstances.
Do you think the back bumper is...
It's just
like,
rounder.
It's rounded. So like when they're trying to push... It just doesn't line up the way it probably needs to.
Yeah. Well, there's just the center of that curve is, you know, your margin of error is small.
Right.
So being able to push that car straight. And that's why when it got to bouncing around over those bumps and they're nose to tail pushing each other. But you got to know over those bumps, like I would always try to let a guy go unless it was like you had to have a little breather right there in order to get him over the bumps. And I think they just got too greedy.
Martin Truex Jr., one of the Joe Gibbs Racing drivers, of course, he finished 11th, but he was battling radio interference issues throughout the course of the race. Is there anywhere worse to have maybe limited communication with your spotter? I mean, that's a ordeal.
It was a bad deal for, it seemed like about half the field. And I don't know what was going on at Talladega over the weekend, but there was a lot of radio interference for a lot of cars in the field. So it'll be interesting to see how the teams and radio company and NASCAR decide to as to what was wrong with everything on that particular weekend, because it was static, it was people coming over the radio but you depend on your spotter so much at these style of racetracks to be able to do what you need to do and, you know, make the moves like Michael McDowell tried to make at the end of the race as to whether you're clear or not clear, which lane's moving, which lane's not moving. It is not a fun situation. Very, very annoying as a driver and frustrating as well.
Yeah, well, at least he's still got 11th place out of that.
Unreal. He was there at the end, too. Like, I mean, without him,
Reddick doesn't win,
right? Because that was his last, that was really his last teammate.
Yeah.
I think if McDowell doesn't go all the way to the bottom, I think they put him three wide and he gets in the sucker hole. You know what I mean? Like, had he had not thrown the block and let Brad to the inside, the 19 and the 45 were far enough back to where they could have still maneuvered around him.
Yeah, and it's a terrible spot to be in.
You know, defense.
You got to do what you got to do in those situations, but it's tough to throw two blocks and have it work out.
Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie, formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area, so you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? from finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience. Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those are some of the bigger stories, of course, coming out of it, this race. Overall, though, your feelings about kind of what we saw with Talladega, because we were talking off camera and Kevin was saying he was a little frustrated with how this one went. Do you want to tell us why?
Yeah, the fuel mileage stuff and look, I understand that there's it's a newer problem with the fuel savings that we have. It's we were 4 or 5 seconds off the pace. And I think everybody knows that we need to start working on something for those super speedway races, ASAP. Because I think that the teams need to be trying to figure the package out. I think everybody's got the package figured out at this particular point to say, okay, this is how we race. This is what we do. We save fuel so that we can spend less time on pit road. We do A, B, C, D, E, right? And that's the process. Everybody knows the process. We got to mix it up way different for next year from a speedway package to keep these guys trying to figure it out. I don't know what that is, but it just needs to be drastically different so that, when you look at the pushes that you give right now, they're just not rewarded for what they should be in order to move the car in front of you to make a big enough difference. And right now you push as hard as you can and sometimes you gain a half a car length, right? And so these guys have figured out that you just push and push and push and push and push. And at the end, you know it's going to result in a wreck because everybody's just going to push until somebody wrecks. And right. And you know, you have to be living on the edge of wrecking somebody all the time. And you know that's fine. But I want the pushes to mean something. I want the guy in the middle of the pack not just to have to sit there. You know, if he wants to get in that third lane and push somebody, yeah, it might be risky, but I want it to make that car go faster. Right now we're locked into two lanes and the guys in the middle of the pack are screwed because they can't go anywhere. And, you know, then at the beginning of the stages and the first half of the last stage, everybody's just saving gas. So I wasn't thrilled with the way that it all worked out. I think it's needed to go out and figure out a new package for 2025. And we've got what we've got for this particular year, but it wasn't, I didn't like it. I think that the solutions for me, I would like everybody to start working on what the solutions are. And those are the things I don't like the saving gas. I get that it's part of it. I don't like the fact that you can not go anywhere in the middle of the pack. And I don't like the fact that when you push, it doesn't make a bigger difference in speed.
Yeah. We saw at the end of the race, it was like Harrison Burton, I think, Chris Buescher, Blaney, they were trying to make the third lane go. They worked on that for 20 laps and they needed more cars. They kept gaining more cars. And it looked like an SVG at one point was coming. I'm like, there's no way that this guy from New Zealand is about to win at Talladega. And then I don't know what happened, but Kyle Busch and Ty Gibbs get up there and it just like
stalled it.
It just literally like it was like a light switch and it was over. And we need that third lane to be able to form so that people can make moves and the racing is what we're all used to.
I think the speedway package should change every year. I don't think it should ever be the same.
Why not?
I mean, we've got 6 of those races now and the intriguing part is when they're all trying to figure it out. Now they all know how to do it and it's not what it needs to be. We got to keep it mixed up and it needs to change every year.
Keep it hard for these teams and these drivers because these guys are always going to figure it out.
Yeah.
They figure it out very quickly, faster than we think that they figure it out. That's why there's guys that dominate races. Keep it moving and keep the goalposts moving for them and make it interesting for them because why not?
He didn't go too hard. He was
nah.
king.
Yeah, no, his, fa- his face though. Look, his face though
gives his feelings his away pretty away. Often. But
yeah, well, you know, if you really want to get me fired up, we just talk about this damn pylon.
That's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the pylon.
I don't understand the whole theory of the pylon. Hey, go to the app. Don't watch the race. Go to the app and see what lap we're on. That makes no sense. How about we just put a pylon up so everybody can see what position your car is running in the scoreboard?
Right.
If it's up to you, how many positions? Because the old pylon only had 10 on it.
Yeah.
Like it was a short It was short.
Looking
either
at
way,
phone,
but the bottom rotated.
Yeah. The bottom rotated.
Bottom rotated.
I understand. But so how many, if you were to put a pylon up at a racetrack, how many spots do you want it?
I mean, I would say probably 20.
20 okay. spots on
that's
it?
That's good. Yeah.
Maybe 20.
But look,
Indy's got what? 33?
Is yeah,
it? And that what's on their scoreboard? And I mean, the bottom rotates. Yeah, but that one's Charlotte's got 20 and the bottom of the pylon rotates. But I don't know how you invite all those people to the infield and then say, get our app so that you can see what lap we're on.
Well,
no, how about we put the pylon back up?
Looking at your phone, I don't think is ever the answer. No. Taking away from the live event.
How many drunk race fans do you think are going to look at their phone? You don't want to hold a beer in their phone?
Right, yeah. It's the swing and a miss there.
I want to talk to ops and find out.
Why don't you do that?
The reasoning.
Thought process.
Yeah.
Well, they had kind of a thought process on that you should we encourage you to download the app. That was their.
Yeah, that was what they said, but I don't think that's what it is. Like, I feel like it has to be something with like obstruction of view or.
They said it was old.
Pylon is old. And yeah, if it's old, then maybe you can't get parts for it.
Well, let's put a new one up.
Yeah. So
Kevin's gonna fund it. He will pay for that. I'm kidding.
How much do you think the pylon? How much do you think the pylons cost?
Don't care.
I want to make a bet with you.
I want to see the pylon back up in the infield.
Pylon.
Yeah, when it blows down, put it back up. Insure that baby. Something.
Insure,
I don't know.
Insure that baby.
The pylon needs to go back up.
There.
Everybody likes to look at the pylon. There's just, how can you have a racetrack that when you leave,
I agree,
doesn't have a pylon full of numbers on the finishing order? I mean, think about it. I can think back as to many of the races where you won, where you just take a picture.
It's
of the
iconic.
Pylon.
Yeah.
It's iconic.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about it is Texas took away their pylon?
Yes.
Right?
Well, Big Hoss.
Yeah. Well, no, they got Big Hoss on the backstretch. Yeah,
but I'm saying they just got rid of it because of that or?
No. I don't know. But what I was saying is, those two tracks are owned by separate entities.
Yeah, the fact that the pylons are gone 2 weeks in a row.
I think no one would have noticed, but it happened to be 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
And it's two different decision makers that do it.
Yeah.
Both the wrong decision.
I think that's interesting.
Confirming.
I bet no one would, because after Texas, you're like, hey, where do we finish? Oh, I don't know. And then you get to tell
it. Well, it's just like qualifying. Like you think back to qualifying and everybody's sitting in the stands watching qualifying. All right, look at your phone. Oh, yay. It's that spontaneous with that number popping to the top of the board.
Yeah.
And everybody going,
that's
cheering.
The part.
Totally.
I can't think of the word right now, but there's something to it. The spirit of racing. There's something to a pylon.
The enthusiasm.
Yeah.
It adds to the enthusiasm.
Yeah. When you're waiting.
I don't usually
nostalgia.
Get past four letter words.
Yeah.
So. Usually anything past four letter words, Caitlin's going to have to think of for us.
Yeah, we've seen all you right. try to use it more than twice. You definitely because when you're watching qualifying and your favorite driver comes up and then they go by and you got to sit there and wait, the anticipation of it is kind of missed probably.
Yeah.
Watching it go, your guy go to the top of the board.
Yes.
Okay. So that's our overarching thoughts from Talladega. We're moving on now to the next race, which, of course, Dover is up next. We've actually finished 10 races are in the books. I feel like this is a good time to look at the season as a whole and talk about what we think has been the biggest story, biggest surprise. I mean,
I think that the biggest story is Hendrick versus Gibbs. I think that's really what it comes down to at this point. They've had the best cars. I think you could add the Toyotas in of at 23-11 to being the most competitive cars. I think that the Gibbs cars have still been consistently better than the 23-11 cars, but the Hendrick cars have week after week done what they need to do to be competitive. So, and I look at, I look at the amount of mistakes that have been made this year on pit road or from the drivers. I think everybody's feeling that edginess and pressure of the situation of knowing that when they're in position, they got to perform. But even last week, I mean, the speeding penalties and penalties on pit road of all the things, it's week after week after week. And the shorter these pit stops get, the more competitive they get and the more errors that you're going to see because there's just less and less room for error. So I think Hendrick versus Gibbs for me is the competition story.
I had that written down too. It'll be interesting too, because this time a year ago, this is when Joe Gibbs Racing really started to pick up, because Truex won at Dover, Hamlin at Kansas, Truex at Sonoma. So there's a lot of good places coming up for that race organization that they could kind of take it away from Hendrick maybe a little bit. We'll see.
I'm wondering who's going to stink up the show.
Okay, so you're thinking there could just be someone else swooping
well,
in?
Well, someone's gonna show up that's been like kind of in the weeds, and I feel like it's gonna be a Ford, to be honest, because they didn't really hit any type of stride last year until the second half of the year. So if that's kind of their, I wouldn't say it's a strategy because you want to win earlier, because winning earlier is easier, but if we look back to last year, it worked out for them, right? Ended with a championship. So we'll see. Maybe one of the Team Penske cars kind of gets on a roll because Ryan won the 600 last year.
Right.
And then it kind of felt like they started clicking off some really good speed after that.
When you talk to those guys, though, they just don't, they're not very confident about anything. And, you know, sometimes it's the engine's not got enough power. Sometimes it's the front end doesn't turn. You know, it's kind of a moving target. And I agree with you. You know, I think Blaney had the speed last year, though. He had the speed throughout the year. They didn't capitalize on it until they got to the 600.
Right.
But he still had speed early in the year. And they were dominant. Our cars were dominant. At the super speedway races. And yeah, you know, we didn't win them all, but we still controlled most of them from that standpoint. But I look for the Gibbs cars at Dover to be probably, you know, in the mix as the cars to beat. I think Truex obviously is probably the one that you look at to possibly get that first win of the season.
I wonder if we have the same pick.
Well, I don't know.
I'm sure you guys do.
And I think, obviously Kyle Larson's going to be fast. Yeah. I think that those guys are going to be fast. I think Alex Bowman, I think he needs to probably, you know, figure out what he needs to do and what he needs in the car to be as competitive as those other guys to get the win, because really Dover was the place where, he shined, in the past. So, what else do I have written down here?
I had another name. And I've been trying to work this in somehow. Your hunting partner, Kyle Busch.
Yeah.
Cause he had two wins at this point a year ago.
I would agree with you. I think that the wheels have fallen off of the eight car. I think that, you know, they and he was frustrated again after the race this week
more frustrated this week than
and just talking to him this week, you know, he knew that they needed to try to capitalize at Talladega because he hadn't felt very good about where they were.
Here's the tweet, I hate these cars,
he says.
Yeah, so.
Ride in line, Eagles finish where you are. Try to race for a win, finish last. Yeah. I hate these cars.
They definitely have some issues that they have to work through. Austin Dillon has qualified and run better the last 2 weeks. Kyle qualified good this week. Obviously, you saw the quote from him as to what he thought about his race, but I don't know. You know, I think the first few weeks of the season, I really looked at Kyle and I'm like, man, they could have won any of those races if things had gone well. And then all of a sudden, the pit crew's problems started, and things have just completely unraveled.
How was the hunting trip with him though? Because the photos were very sweet of you and your daughter Piper that spent time together.
Yes, well,
we went to Realtree Farms and. I was there hunting with Piper. Kyle took a picture of us. Piper and I were sitting out on the deck eating donuts because that's what we did the whole hunting trip was eat donuts. So I had powdered donuts and she had chocolate donuts. But that was Piper's first hunting trip.
That's very
so we were turkey hunting. We did not kill a turkey. But the best part about the turkey hunt was Piper took – we got out in the woods and all of a sudden – she pulls this notepad out of her pocket. It's one of those little 3x5 notepads. And she has a pencil. And the first thing that happened was we shot the guns. And then we went into the field and we sat in the blind. And so we went through this whole process to make sure that she understood. And every time she would get done with something, it's, all right, I need a gun to hunt. I need to be quiet. She's got this whole notebook of notes that she took throughout the whole hunt. So it was pretty cute.
That's funny. You know, I just stole your sip, I realized. Isn't that one of your social sips? Was the hunting?
I'd have to look at the notes.
I'm so sorry We were talking about Kyle. I got excited. Yeah. I got overzealous.
It was part of the sips.
We can talk about it again in 5 minutes. Yeah. Sorry about that.
It's dunking all over my own program over here.
Well, you'll have that. All right. Let's talk about Dover, though, now, because you won there 3 times. I actually was watching back the race you won the last time there, 2020. And anytime you'd race there, though, you would win or you would lead a lot of laps. Like it wasn't just like, oh, a few laps, get the victory. 200 plus laps at least.
Right.
It swept both stages in 2020, won the race.
Yeah. So it was It was a racetrack that we never did very good at RCR. And Dover was one of those places that Rodney had circled on the calendar to say, we are not going to run bad at Dover anymore. We're going to figure out how to make you run good at Dover. And from the very first day that we went to Dover with Stuart Haas Racing and Rodney, we were new favorite track, right? That was a place that we expected to go to and compete and win. Also frustrating, three times we had the lug nut knock the valve stem out of the wheel, leading the freaking race. Three freaking lug nuts.
Dominating. Like Kevin was waxing their asses.
Just completely demolishing them. But made it a lot more fun because Dover can be a really, really frustrating track. In these new Gen 7 cars, it is a very, very physical racetrack, but add these cars into that mix and you have all you can handle from a physical standpoint with just the bouncing, just your head beating off the headrest and just how physical and fast the corners are. A lot of corner speed, a lot of drag on these cars, so you carry a lot of entry speed and exit speed and mid-corner speed. So you got to go through the corner really, really fast, and you got to get over the bumps in turn three. So the last place that I had to convince Rodney Childers to come be my crew chief.
What do you mean?
So that was the first official time that we actually went out in public together. And, we went on a golf cart ride out of the racetrack over to the ice cream parlor.
A little courting.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was finally the point where I'd finally convinced him that he was going to be the crew chief of the four car the next year.
Did you have to convince him? Like, was this a hard sell?
It was a hard sell.
Yes.
It was over a year. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He thought I was damn crazy. He's like,
we were building from nothing, too. Yeah. That was the other thing.
Yeah. He thought I was crazy. He's like, we had a couple of ultimatums where he would sit me down and we'd get to a certain point of courting Rodney. And he sat me down one time and he said, look, he's like, I just can't be yelled like that on the radio. He's like, you can't yell at me like that. And you can't yell at the pit crew. And if I were to do this, we just can't have that. So that was fun. To be able to go through that whole process. But yeah, it took almost a year, over a year.
You didn't really listen to him when he said, we can't have that, did you?
Oh, no. I would classify myself as one of the calmer people on the radio while I was at SHR.
When they came back from the shop every week, you know, and, you know, either win or, you know, something would happen, I would gauge.
Yeah.
Like, I think if he was, like, at a 12 at RCR, it's probably, like, at worst, maybe, like, a 9 or 10.
Me?
On the worst, when it was bad. But, like, normally he probably was, like, between a 4 and a 6 on his own scale. The guy said that he did a good job.
I thought it was pretty drastic. I would say more like 2 to 4.
Yeah, you would say that.
Instead of a 10 to 12.
Mm. Interesting.
Not that drastic?
I mean, 4 to 6 is pretty respectable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a certain amount of intensity that I would carry. Yeah. And look, I would push people. Right? It's all about the people and how do you get the most out of them, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's how do I push your buttons to make you think? But also, if I kind of piss you off along the way, I'm fine with that. As long as we're going to get better, you might be a little bad, but tomorrow you're going to come back and say, I got an idea.
Yeah.
Some motivation tactics.
Yeah. Let me ask you this with qualifying. You guys were, back in the day, you guys were wide open for qualifying there?
At Dover?
Yeah, at Dover.
No. Close?
Did you just breathe it or did you get all the way out?
You'd have to get all the way out of
it. Okay, so what is the level of pucker factor at Dover?
Oh, it's a lot.
Here we go.
It's a commitment.
What's a higher level of pucker factor, the Thunderbirds or qualifying at Dover?
Thunderbirds.
But how close is it?
It's not really close.
It's not really close?
No. Okay. Because I have no control of that Thunderbird.
That's fair.
Barrel roll and go straight up and put me back in the seat and pull 9 G's, and I felt like I was a foot shorter.
Qualifying at Dover is the hardest qualify. I mean, probably the.
I would say to be able to qualify on the pole at Dover is as much fun as you'll have in a race car. And the most Dover to me is one of the biggest sensations of speed that we get because it's rough, the G's are high, and the way that you drop down into the corners and pop up out of the corners from the elevation change. At Dover is just, it's just different. It's just different than anywhere else that you go. And you just have to be aggressive. You have to be very aggressive to make a fast lap.
You drive off and they're like 3 stories down.
Have you stood on the walk bridge, the walk over bridge while they go underneath. It's pretty unreal.
It's pretty gnarly.
It is. Wild. I encourage everyone to do that if they have the ability to do so.
You need to get over.
You can really get the sensation of speed. So when you win this race, you get a Monster the Miles trophy. Where are you keeping those? Like,
well, I used to bring, I would,
whatever.
I always bring the trophy pump with me so that they don't get lost. So, let's see, I guess it would have been 2000, I don't know, 15, whatever year it was.
It wasn't 14.
Yeah.
What was the first one?
It was 15.
Yeah. So 2015, I bring Miles home and Keelan thinks Miles is the coolest thing ever. So we put it in the playroom. So I come home one day. Miles is missing an arm.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
We have broke Miles in the playroom, apparently. I don't know if we fell on it or a ball got kicked at it or what happened, but Miles broke an arm, so we had to super glue his arm back on. But the first Miles lived in the playroom for a while because Keelan thought that Miles the Monster was pretty cool.
They even have those gold-plated ones now they give out. The gold-plated Miles.
Yeah, I forget what those are for, though. Mm-hmm.
I forget. I know.
But was it, maybe it was an anniversary?
It had to be some sort of anniversary.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Truex is cool.
Yeah.
Martin loves that place. If we're racing on Monday, he's going to win. That's for sure.
Martin, let's not race on Monday.
I'm just saying. That's just saying.
No. That sounded like Piper. This weekend at the racetrack, she got to go back to MRO and see all of her friends. And she said, I left the motorhome to go to the booth. And I said, all right, are you good? You got a good plan for the day? She's like, I'm just hoping for rain, Daddy. I just want to stay one more day.
Talladega.
We left at 5:30 in the morning to go to Dawsonville to interview Chase Elliott on Thursday. And we got home Sunday night at like 10 o'clock. It felt like a month.
Yeah.
Because
Kevin's tired.
So much road time.
He's been putting in a lot for this
Fox gig.
Putting
a lot of miles on the road.
Kev Bob's a little tight.
Right. Okay. Time now for Mamba Social Sips. And I do apologize for stealing one of your sips. You can have... I owe you beer.
Yeah.
My bad, my friend.
It's okay. I'm not too mad about it. We'll figure it out. We'll get through here. All right. So, Social Sips. Welcome to the show, everybody. rap beefs are back, right? Okay. We got a rap battle beef going on between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. And Kevin, you now know who Kendrick Lamar is.
I mean, you tell me he's a rapper, right?
Right.
Can you sing me a song or something? Just give me some lyrics?
No, I'm not going to do that.
I got you. I'm not going to do that. I didn't know. Maybe I might recognize the song.
No, but we're good. We know what we got.
Okay.
So they're beefing, right? And they have diss tracks.
What are we beefing over?
Man,
is it beefy?
AI thing.
Yeah, at that level, like...
It's an AI thing?
Well, Drake used AI to help make this song. He used Tupac's voice and Snoop Dogg's voice. The song's actually cool. I'll send it to you later.
Okay, yeah.
But what I really want to know is what beefs have we seen that you guys have seen over the last year or two that are pretty high?
So this is a non-competitive beef, really no athletic bones in either one of their body? Well, is that what you're saying?
I mean, they're just mad at each other. So yeah, take it. Yeah, sure.
I guess
verbal beef.
A very similar beef. A verbal beef.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that.
Well, I'd say a verbal beef. The best one I've seen this year in our sport is Marcus Smith versus Denny Hamlin on Twitter.
Fair.
That's right.
Fair. Yeah, that was great.
I mean, can you think of a better one?
No, not a better one. Have you seen any?
That
Caitlin?
One was pretty hard.
No, I was trying to think about this, and I actually like his choice the best because it was so out of character for one in particular.
Yes, yeah. It was very. They were throwing some pretty hard jabs right off the get-go. Mm-hmm.
Sadly, it's all been deleted, so we can't relive it.
Oh, it's never
gone. We can always dig it back up. Yeah. There were screenshots taken for sure.
There were screenshots, yeah.
Denny's had a lot of those types of beefs with a lot of people.
Well, he's kind of beefing with that. He's beefing almost with everybody, I feel like.
But, yeah.
Mine, personally, it's not as high level because they're kind of like, it's low-key and kind of... Little jabs, but Ross Chastain and Ryan Blaney, their little deal goes back and forth, and you got to be paying attention or else you'll miss it. And Ross was in the booth for the Xfinity race in Texas with Joey Logano, and Ross shot a couple jabs at Ryan from the booth, and then Ryan was in the booth this past weekend with Daniel Suarez. So like this, they're around each other a lot.
What kind of jabs?
He was talking about Phoenix and air blocking with Joey.
Okay.
And he was talking about air blocking. And he's like, yeah, you know, you guys, air blocked me and you won your championship. Congratulations. And then I air blocked Ryan to win Phoenix the next year. And it was a bigger deal when I did it. And just little
love it.
Pokes. Yeah. I love watching it. Also, I don't have a beef with this man. He's supposed to be my boy, my brother in arms, but Bubba Wallace posted about me and Josh Sims over the weekend. All right, so I'm doing my first ever hit, right, for Fox Sports. Just nervous as all get out. And Josh, every week, people come up to Josh and are like, hey, Mama, like, love you doing what you're doing. And Josh texts me about it. Well, Bubba is like, all right, hey, Josh, new haircut? With the dying laughing emoji. Like, bro, why you got to do that to me? I thought we were tight.
So is there a war?
It's not, I mean, yeah, I got it. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I definitely got to
get it. I can help you.
You got a couple ideas?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We're going to work
for sure.
That. For sure?
Yes.
Because he does this to me. Me, him, and Blaine. Yeah. Yeah. Then Josh does the Spider-Man point and a Spider-Man meme back and like.
Well, at least you can make light of this.
No, it's great. I mean, Josh is a very good looking man. And so,
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, I feel like this week there's probably more than just that. I think this week that you definitely need to have a word. You need to have a word for the broadcast.
I don't know why I'm getting punished for you messing up your
word. No, that's a fail. It's a challenge. I screwed it up.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. I just, you know, can you say my word from last week?
Hullabaloo?
Hubbaloo.
No, hullabaloo.
Hullabaloo.
I would have said hula.
Hula.
Hula. It's how I pronounce hello. Okay, it's fine.
Okay.
Since Caitlin dunked on my other
social
sip, we don't have any clips of this, but this weekend when I was flying back, so like when I fly with a cast, right? With my
Achilles.
Fake an injury to get through the get through.
It's not a fake injury, but they definitely feel bad
for
me.
It's a sympathy card. Handicap line?
No, I don't do that. I haven't got.
You get a wheelchair?
I haven't got that far yet.
Okay,
a
but
scooter.
I lost the night before, like Sunday night, because I flew back Monday. So Sunday night, had some cocktails, right? And I put my ID in a different part of my wallet. I get all the way to the airport, can't find my ID.
Oh no!
Luckily, I always keep my old one in it just in case something dumb like this happens.
Did you have a hot flash?
I was stressed. Because they brought me to the side. They're like, yeah, you're not going to be able to, like, this isn't going to work. It's expired. I'm like, yeah, I know. The person at the front desk said it was cool. They're like, yeah, well, it's not cool. And I'm like, okay. They're like, do you have anything to show who you are? I'm like, I have 3 credit cards and like my Blue Cross Blue Shield card and like a Red Cross, the blood donation has my name on it. I have a card for that. My AAA card. And the guy's looking at it. They're looking hard at it. Call it DOB. It's like the term that they use. So like they allow me to go through. Well, now they got to check every part of my bag. They got to check my cast. They got to check everything. But I still got that upgrade. So it was okay.
There you go.
First class.
I hate that they had to take
that
cast off.
Did you ever find the ID in the wrong spot?
It was literally like 2 slots over.
Bummer.
But you know when you just do stuff regularly and then you put it one thing in the wrong
Look,
spot?
Look, man, sometimes I got my glasses on my head like this. Has anybody seen my glasses?
I think everybody's done that. It's okay.
That's my favorite.
All right. Well, there's the social sips.
Social sips.
And a stolen one.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll make sure that.
Sorry.
Don't do that again. Okay.
That's the way it goes.
Time now for our last call. So we're going to go ahead and give our race pick so we think can get it done at Dover. And Kevin, you can
I'm going with Truex.
So am I.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is one of his 9 home tracks.
Yeah.
So hopefully he gets it done. He is a 4-time winner there. So this is a good bet on MTJ.
What is he gets? So for home tracks, he gets New Hampshire, he gets Watkins Glen, and he gets everything in New England.
It's a running
area.
Joke. Yeah,
there's just not very many. Oh, I guess you got Logano too. I guess they got to share the Northeast.
Yeah. And Priest.
Priest, yeah.
Yeah. My pick this week.
Write this down.
Is going to be Ross Chastain.
Oh, okay.
The number one.
Who'd you pick last week?
Harrison Burton.
Well, he ran good.
Yeah, he ran good.
Joey Logano.
It's about finishing.
Yeah.
And we didn't finish.
We finished better than mine.
I almost had the winner.
No,
Brad.
You had second.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
Brad's been, 2 weeks in a row, Brad's finished second. So,
I
think with as much as that we talk about the speed in their car, 2 second place finishes is he's making the most out of it.
Maybe I should stop picking
that's
him.
That's called experience.
I feel bad for Ross now because I picked him and now none of my picks have hasn't been good weeks for Mamba picks.
The Mamba jinx.
You'll
that's
have
not
that.
Good.
So Thursday episode involves Martin Truex, our pick.
It does, yes.
What you got?
Thursday we have the whole stable of Joe Gibbs Racing drivers. I sat down with all 4 of them to do an in-depth interview. We have it's a lot. They were in a really good mood, so the banter back and forth is a lot of fun. I think one of the things that I always tell people I'm like, who's your favorite driver? What do you think? Well, I don't know. You left. And I'm like, what do you mean, dude? You can't find anybody with a good personality. So one of the goals is to try to help show these guys personalities by getting outside of the racetrack. And we went to the driving range or Top Golf or whatever, wherever we went. It wasn't Top Golf.
Oh, was it?
I think they call it Big Shot.
Oh, Big Shot. It's the same.
Big Shot. Yeah. So we went to Big Shot.
Okay.
And took him over there, and Christopher Bell took some of my money.
Did he?
Yeah. He beat the other three.
Oh, he was the best of the four?
Closest to the pin competition. So just a little teaser to tell you who's going to win that. But had a lot of fun. Ty Gibbs tells an amazing story about his dad at a BMX race. So it's a fun listen.
That's cool. I don't think I've ever interviewed four people at once. That's impressive.
Yeah, I was nervous. I had to call Chris Myers. Hey, give me some advice on interviewing more than one person. But they made it easy.
Cool.
They were in a really good mood, and it was a lot of fun.
Christopher Bell won the golf
over Denny.
Yeah, I thought that was amazing.
I 1,000% think it's amazing because Christopher Bell never gets picked for anything.
Oh, and we talk about that, and we also talk about Denny Hamlin gives him a lot of grief about his first car.
Okay.
Oh, well, yeah. We're just going to have to listen to find out what Kevin's referring to. Okay, that does it for this episode. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review. Follow us, Happy Harvick Pod, on all the social media platforms. And we'll see you guys after Dover.